Good morning. You're listening to WGBH's Morning Edition, 10 minutes before 9 on a Thursday morning. And yes, Jared Bowen is here. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Lots to talk about for this holiday weekend. And in fact, you're taking us to where modern American theater began in Provincetown.
Yeah, this is a great story, and I have to say, it was kind of a revelation to me. I always think of Provincetown, as we know, a haven for artists like Edward Hopper, who are drawn to the northern light there and the beaches, the seascapes. But it also, as of 100 years ago, was a huge magnet for theater artists. And right now, the Provincetown Players is celebrating the centennial of this group of theater artists who went there 100 years ago. They had become so disenchanted in New York with the state of theater. You know, there's so many ties to today, frankly. They were tired of commercial theater. They were tired of melodrama that was coming over from Europe, and they wanted to create something new and different. And legend has it that this one young man, 27 years old, showed up. He was unable to get his pieces presented anywhere, his scripts shown, including at Harvard, where he was. So this young man, the legend part of it is that he showed up with a trunk full of plays, and a career legacy was born, and that was Eugene O'Neill.
Wow, that's right.
But I talked to Margaret Van Sant recently, who I think you know from
your time in theater,
and she is directing. So right now, what Provincetown Players is doing is a centennial celebration. They're presenting four of the original pieces that were presented 100 years ago. I had the fortune of seeing some of them, and they are as resonant today. The language is as resonant today as it was 100 years ago because they were the theater of the new of the time. But Margaret Van Sant, who's directing O'Neill's The Sniper, talked to me about what happened when this group of Greenwich Village artists gathered in Provincetown.
There was a strong movement afoot in the village of all kinds of new ideas and new thoughts. Feminism, socialism, psychoanalysis, all kinds of new ways of being in the world, looking at the world. And those people converged on Provincetown in the summer of 1915 and said, you know what, let's apply some of those ideas to a new kind of American theater.
Wow, what a time 100 years ago in Provincetown. You had all of these artists and political thinkers and a lot of the expats who couldn't go to Europe because of World War I. They all ended up in the same place, and out of this cauldron came the new American theater.
You know, and Bob, I can't wait until they invent time travel so that I can go back to Provincetown this time 100 years ago. But I talked to her, too, about what happened. What was sort of in the air there that made it so different, that drew people like Eugene O'Neill? And she said, this is what she had to say about why it really flourished.
So it was hard to start it in New York. I think it was easier here, away from the imposition of those Broadway ideals, to do it in your, you know, front porch, and then to do it in a fish shack. And that's, you know, and that's what happened when O'Neill came. Then they moved over to a fish shack on the pier and did Bound East for Cardiff, and theater changed in America forever.
That's right. You know, I can remember there was the old Provincetown Playhouse out on the wharf that unfortunately burned down in 1977, but you'd be sitting there watching a play, the tide would come in, and literally water would come up in between the floorboards of the theater.
Well, that's what Margaret Van Sant was saying, too, is, of course, this was theater that was absent of melodrama. It was so naturalistic. So they would be out on this fish shack, and the foghorns would be blowing, the light would be splashing, and the waves would be coming up. And you can actually visit where, of course, is the same thing. It's interesting that all of these theaters were washed away or burned down, but it still flourishes. But you can go to Commercial Street, and you can see the spot where Eugene O'Neill first presented.
That's right. And, of course, Eugene O'Neill's father was famous for playing in The Count of Monte Cristo, which O'Neill hated. So a lot of his theatrical what he wanted to do in theater was counter to what his father was doing, all of that melodramatic stuff. And it was 100 years ago that really American theater was born.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, we move on now to the Serio Collective.
So the Serio Collective, this is it's kind of a like-minded story, actually. Anybody who's a big dance fan, I think, here in Boston will know Jeffrey Serio and his sister Leah Serio. They're both principal dancers with Boston Ballet, both very exquisite dancers. Jeffrey is only 24. He's among the youngest ever male principal dancers at Boston Ballet. But what he and his sister have decided to do is, during their dance downtime this summer, create this collective collective with a number of their dancer friends, in which they'll just make art, make dance, but without the pressures of the ballet world and the administrative pressures that basically they're their own boss. And so they'll be presenting these works at the Vineyard Arts Project on July 18th, and then again at the Cape Dance Festival July 25th. And I spoke with them just this week. I spoke with Jeffrey about why they wanted to do this outside of the normal confines of the ballet world.
I want to have a place where we can, my friends and my sister and dancers that I have this year, to come together and not to worry about if they have an opinion about something, and to say it out loud, and so that we approach it in that way, so we can create something all together, collectively.
Well, it's very interesting because these are all people who are immensely, immensely talented. And here's what we get to see them do when they are unleashed. And Jeffrey Cirio has been moving into this fledgling career in choreography anyway, again, only 24, and doing this in his spare time. And in fact, his piece Fremd, in which he uses music, it was a musical mashup of Chopin and electronic music, was one in the contemporary dance program for Boston Ballet's last program. So they're able to do this new choreography, their interpretation of dance. So it's kind of fun to see this unrestricted dance. But I also have to mention this sort of a good news, bad news moment here, because just this week, Jeffrey Cirio was named the new soloist at American Ballet Theater in New York.
Wow.
So he will be leaving Boston Ballet. So this is among your last chances to see him locally right now.
And that's the Vineyard Arts Project July 18th and at the Cape Dance Festival July 25th.
Yes.
All right. Next, we move to Infinitely Polar Bear opening in theaters tomorrow.
Yeah, this is a piece that actually hits very close to home for us, because Mark Ruffalo plays Cam Stewart, who's a man in 1978 suffering from bipolar disorder. He lives here in Cambridge, and he is a former employee of WGBH in real life, in addition to the movie. what becomes so endearing about this character is that he is suffering, this mental illness, but at the same time caring for his daughters, because we find his wife early on in this film, in order to make money for the family, which is interesting because he's a Forbes, but the money, basically the Boston Brahmin money, is on lockdown. He can't access it, but he can't work. So she goes off to New York, again, true story, to get her MBA, and leaves him in charge of the daughters. And it becomes this very, very heartwarming story about him managing this illness, but also forging this wonderful relationship with his young daughters. In Mark Ruffalo's hands, of course, it's very endearing, very sweet, because he's such a talented actor. And I talked to him recently about how he looked at the role of this father, Cam.
I realized there was parts of me that I could bring to it. It was a really great portrait of a man who is essentially caring and compassionate and fun-loving and alive, who was also dealing with the affliction of manic depression.
And this is, I should mention, is written by Maya Forbes, who is Cam's daughter, and she's a filmmaker and screenwriter. This is her first film, so she both wrote and directed, and this was her way of committing this story in her own memory. It's sort of a film, cinematic version of her own memoir.
All right. Now, you're going to host Open Studio tomorrow night at 8:30 on WGBH2, so tell us what's up on that.
We will have a look back for your 4th of July weekend. We have a look back at some of our favorite stories, recent stories, places you can still visit, so we'll take another look at that soaring sculpture above the Rose Kennedy Greenway, designed by Janet Eckelman. We'll take you to an exhibit I was very, very fond of the work of Jean-Michel Otenel, who has designed the first contemporary art sculpture in the Palace of Versailles Gardens in 300 years. And something very few people know about, this World War II museum in Natick. We'll look back at all of these. So as people start to plan their summer vacations, their 4th of July vacations, we have your hit list.
Thank you. And speaking of summer vacations, have a great one, Jared.
Thank you,
we'll
Bob.
We'll see you
I will.
Upon your return. And Jared Mullen, our arts editor here at WGBH. And you're listening to Morning Edition.